Unfiltered opinions.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
Because you secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
Woo! I'm Jimmy Moyaha.
I'm Nicolette Mashile.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Straight into it. In Market Matters this week, we take a look at the Monetary Policy Committee's decision to keep rates unchanged. We take a look at China's GDP output, 4.7% below the 5% level that is the magic number for China, which is insane. Some delistings in the form of Sasfin and a couple of others, and the Transnet loan. Technically, it's called a loan. But welcome again. And actually, this is probably going to be one of the best episodes that we've done, because the amount of experience that's in studio for those that are listening to the pod, just on the other side of the desk, not on my side of the desk, on the other side of the desk, cumulatively, I estimate at just shy of 100 years.
Yo.
So 50, I think it's about 52, 53 years on the one side, and close to about 38 to 40 years.
See, I started as a kid, so I've probably got 40. I started when I was 12.
So we're just shy of an entire century of knowledge.
I wasn't working at 12, although I got to say, if I'd gone to the exchange in Diagonal Street, they would have put me to work.
And if you're wondering who's joining us in studio as the studio guest this week, it is none other than Sasfin Wealth's David Shapiro. You may have heard the name, you may have heard the voice, but certainly those that don't know who that gentleman is should probably not be watching this show. You should probably you have very little knowledge of markets. But Uncle David, thank you so much for coming through. Thank you for giving us your time and for joining us in this conversation.
Well, lovely to be here.
And fancy, eh?
And fancy.
I prefer it to Santon, actually. I was saying that to Simon. Mm, got a nicer feel.
Much better feel. Well, Simon lives here, so he's biased to it.
No, I'm talking my book.
I think so. I think the Rosebank has gone up. You know, I'd prefer to be here. Our offices are in Santon, but I'm going to start advocating change.
And a big part of that was, to go completely off topic, the Gautrain station. Because when I moved to Joburg in 2007, Rosebank was not much of a muchness.
Yeah.
And then there was a whole lot of development around the World Cup and all of those things that happened. But nonetheless, with all of those developments, we still find ourselves in a very precarious position as South Africa. The Monetary Policy Committee deciding to keep rates unchanged. It was kind of expected, but at the same time, how much longer is this going to go on for?
It's such a difficult question to answer. Why I say difficult, I don't think the Reserve Bank can answer that. They're also waiting carefully. Sadly, they've got inflation that, you know, just still over 5%, which is on the high side, understanding that the rest of the world is coming down. You know, the United States is starting to come down as well. So they've got to be very careful about reducing rates. But on the other hand, we need stimulus, you know. Mm-hmm. And Simon, you know, if you look at the prime rate, it's 11.75%. No business can function paying those kind of interest rates. So that's got to come down just to give businesses a bit of margin to expand. So I think that's the dilemma that the Reserve Bank finds themselves in. They want to be true, you know, to monetary policy and to inflation theory and so on. But on the other hand, they've got an economy that is worthy.
They're also focusing on the 4.5%. And we said this before about the governor. We're well within the band, but he wants 4.5%, which they're going to get to. But there were two votes to cut. I think September is the cut date. There were two votes to cut. All you got to do is swing one person or to get them to take a day off sick or something.
But with the inflation targeting and the inflation ban in that conversation, at some point, surely we should be having a conversation around the fact that, is this a reasonable expectation? Because I understand that it makes us competitive globally and it looks good to have that inflation targeting ban there. But if one of your biggest contributors towards inflation is the government themselves and they determine inflation policy, surely we must realize that something doesn't add up here.
A lot of our inflation is imported as well. It's beyond our control. So that makes it very difficult. We can't control the oil price. We can't control a lot of the imports that come into the country and so on. Food we could probably control by being a little more efficient. I'm saying farmers, but they're doing as best as they can. But at the end of the day, you can't function with rates that high.
You know, absolutely.
We need rates. We need the prime rate, the borrowing rates, to be around about 7-8%. Considering where our inflation is, and I'm being very liberal in that respect. You know, we really need it down to 3 or 4 or something there.
Wouldn't it then be prudent to look at the rate at which the banks borrow from the commercial bank? I mean, that premium that sits between the commercial banks and the central bank in other countries is much lower than it is in South Africa.
Okay, we're going to have fun.
Now we're just going to upset some of the bankers.
No, but it's... But
we're going to have fun.
350 points.
Yeah.
Basically, they go to an ATM, they draw money, they add 350 points.
Okay. And then they give you the... Exactly. And that interim premium...
Is this
premium.
Open season, this podcast?
I mean, surely...
Hello.
At some point, we have to look at what is... If we're really in this government of national unity or what's doing what's best for the country and what's best for the people, then everybody along the way, somewhere we must make these compromises. And from a government perspective as well...
A bank make a compromise?
Jimmy, to be honest,
and I think this is a serious conversation. Our banks are incredibly well capitalized. They are ginormous businesses, overcapitalized. They don't take any risk. You know, this is a lovely little business you're running. Go to a bank and try to raise money. You know, you're going to see what they want. You're going to have to, unfortunately, put your mother up for security or something like that, and your auntie and your auntie's family and so on. They don't hand out money easily, and that's a big problem in South Africa. For on the VC side, venture capital does not exist because of that. So you've touched, you know, I know we're skimming over it, but you're touching on a very important point here. Our banks, and look at the salaries that the bankers pay themselves as well. You know, you could feed the entire country on some of those executive salaries. So it's a very important point that you brought up, you know, that margin, and can we bring those rates down? You know, can we make it easier for companies to exist? This is the last podcast I do.
That's going to be another conversation.
Because that 350-point margin probably comes back from way in the day when prime rates were, you know, at crazy levels, and it was as a percentage. But now it's like, I mean, more than a third of that 1175 is banker margin.
So now we have a situation where your consumer's under pressure. Your bank is saying, oh, no, the consumer's under pressure, but the bank is still comfortable. Yeah. The bank is still cushy. But that's another conversation for another day. Because if we go down that rabbit hole, that's not going to end well, right?
That's an important rabbit hole.
While we are looking at important rabbit holes, Transnet, they secured a loan from the African Development Bank for 18.5 billion rand. Now, by all accounts, this is a loan, as it's said to be a loan. But the last time I checked, and I've got, again, base level accounting degree from Wits University, nothing against the university, probably just my knowledge. When you have a loan that is backed by the government, you may as well put it on the government's balance sheet and call it a bailout.
Correct. Yeah. It is. It's a contingent liability.
Oh, there.
So in any accounting, in your accounts, it will appear as a note. And this is the famous Enron. I don't want to say, you know, Enron kind of had, what did they call it? There were hidden loans. Steinhoff. So this is open. We know it's there, but you have to bring it into account, understanding the country's liabilities and that. So you can't just brush it aside. Where you stand guarantor, you have to make sure that Transnet pay back that loan, because if they don't, as we've seen with Eskom, government comes to bail out, which means the taxpayers come to bail out.
Yeah.
Very interesting that the financing came through a third-party institution and not directly from the state. And so the state stands by and says, the Minister of Finance stands by and says, no more bailouts for SOEs, but standing as guarantor for things for SOEs is equivalent to
but
the
I,
same thing.
So the bailout in SOEs, it depends on what the SOE is. Mm. And if it's Transnet, bail away.
We don't have a choice.
Bail away. Hopefully the money, at least some of it, gets spent well, and we can get iron ore to Sishen, and we can get coal to Richards Bay Coal Terminal, etc., etc. It's when you're bailing out, I don't know, I mean, look, SAA, and I've talked my book there because I still got Voyager miles. So. Transnet's a critical part of our economy, and it is currently broken.
I suppose the optics would have looked bad if you had called it a bailout from the beginning.
Well, particularly because the government has been saying, you know, they're talking tough and bailouts, etc. I mean, but, you know, they're not really, but because, as you say, it's still on the government books at the end of the day.
Jimmy, if you look at Transnet and Eskom, you go back, last year, and you see the impact that that had on the South African economy. And don't look at the Reserve Bank statistics. Go read the mining companies. Read what they said about it.
Kumba
and how much
this
it
week
costs
said
totally.
This. Yeah. You know, and their update this week.
Yeah. And but you need competent people. And we just hope that with this new government, that the people in charge know how to use that money and use it, you know, skillfully.
Kumba has almost a year production stockpiled at Sishen, hot as hell.
That they can't do anything with because they can't move.
Correct.
It's terrible. Speaking of good governance and things that are changing, the couple of delistings that we've had, we don't have much time to get into it, but I suppose I want to look at the obvious one in the Sasfin delisting that's coming up. Uncle David, you've been there for 52 years.
Now, I started at Max Pollock, which became Franco Pollock, which became Sokgen, which became... So I've gone through a few transitions, but I know the Sasfin family well, and this was listed in 87. But the problem is there's a wider problem. Mm. And, you know, for small businesses, it's very difficult to get the benefits of a listing when you're that small. Mm. I've tried through the various competitions, and I know Simon is very much in the same camp that I do. We try and encourage young people or just people generally to buy smaller businesses to get invested in that. But unfortunately, we're swamped by the product salesmen, you know, from all the big institutions who come and sell tracker funds and so on.
NASPAS,
you know, those kind of things. So it's very difficult for some of the smaller businesses to really get the benefits of a list.
These are the same sentiments that were echoed by Michael Sassoon, and I spoke to him this week about that, around it's an interesting decision as well as an asset manager to sit back and say it no longer benefits us, or the benefits to listing are outweighed by the everything else that comes with it. That's a very telling sign or a very telling statement of our market in general as well. Yeah.
But there is. I mean, if I had R1 billion in the bank, I don't. If I had R1 billion in a bank, you could go and buy four or five little small caps for a couple of hundred million each, take them off the market and live happy for the rest of your life, because there is quality that is dirt cheap. But if prices aren't rising and, you know, and some of that were listed in the same period, Combined Motor Holding, I hold it. 15% dividend yield. In the however long I've held it, I think my capital appreciation has been like R12. But I'm earning 15% in the dividend every year. Grindrod's a bit of an exception. Spur's a bit of an exception. And that's from the same time. Crooks Brothers, which I hold because my nephew wanted to buy a banana farm. Crooks Brothers, I mean, okay, look, I don't like primary agricultural businesses. Just nothing happening. And, you know, you got to think that these directors, these boards, these shareholders are regularly looking at this and thinking, why? What is my benefit? The only benefit is that every 6 months they got to chat to you and me on the wireless. And that's probably not fun either for their job.
Don't enjoy that either. But also, I mean, if you look at the listing requirements, they're so onerous from a compliance perspective that you sit there and you say, if we're not listed, we save on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 costs on our balance sheet, on our income statement. We suddenly are able to pass that saving through to our shareholder as a dividend, as an increased dividend, even if it's not every year, but it does add up. If you're listed, you said Sasfin is listed since 87. I mean, if you've listed that long, there's a lot that you've paid to maintain that listing.
For some time, they were well, you know, well followed. But I think as things got bigger, so they shrank, you know, they couldn't keep up with that kind of growth. The other one was Bell as well. Another business. There's no spending. You know, if you look, there's no fixed investment in South Africa as well. So it became very difficult for them. They had tried to take it off before, a bit of a cheeky bid, but they're in the same position. They're not a bad business. But, you know, you can't see the benefit. The shares trade at such a massive discount to what they assume is the intrinsic value. And intrinsic value, you know, Sasfin shares were trading, what, 17, 18. They're bidding at 30. Now, they wouldn't bid 30 if they felt that the intrinsic value was 17 or 18.
That used to be the trade on Sasfin. Yeah. Book value was 0.5, buy it, and then sell it at 1. Bella's trading at the same price from 2007, and that's at takeout price, or a little below. R50, it traded at 2007. The entire 17 years since then, it hasn't traded at $50. And you got to look at that and think to yourself,
We're going to wait another 17 years.
I don't think it's even so much the cost of listing. I mean, that's a cost, and it's an admin and everything else. But it's like you're the Bell family or the Sasfin family, and you're sitting here in your investment, and you're just, you know, you're looking at...
That's it. And the market is telling you your investment hasn't done anything
in
17 years.
You're looking at Sean Summers. He gets given 100 million of share options.
What is it? 104, right?
Yeah. Of which half of it was for doing an organization little graph.
Organizational chart.
Yes. So you look at this and you're like, guys, this is just for nothing. For what? I'm not, this is not creating me wealth. Stock markets are supposed to help flow of capital and wealth creation. Yeah. And if it's not creating the wealth part, why so, yeah, you through, can't issue through, capital within a share
through
price.
My crystal challenge, not what happens is that there are 350 people who chose 5 stocks and I have to track those stocks. And because of that, it's highlighted so many small businesses that I didn't even knew existed that I've been looking into and seen how people have done, I've how well they've done. I never knew something like Core Potash existed, you know, and suddenly here is this in Congo, you know, in the old Congo, the old Belgium Congo, not the DRC. And, you know, also a mine in Tobazimbi and so on. Quantum Foods, you know, there's been so much action around there. To me, it's been very charming to kind of watch these small businesses. And for anybody who's young, who wants to start a portfolio, I think there's some rich pickings still on the JSE.
Oh, yeah. I think there is value there. And I think more delistings coming.
I know for a fact Anthony Clark would agree with that. I spoke to him as well, and he said there's so much value in small to medium cap stocks that we should probably just build a fund for it and go out and buy some of those things. But that's all we have time for in our Market Matters segment. We will dig into some of these other stories at another time. I'm certainly interested to see how we approach the banking conversation, but that's a story for another day.